you have only to read through the program for the Athens Dialogues. Indeed, you have only to look around this magnificent auditorium in this wonderful building to be struck by the enormous ambition of the project. In choosing a subject for my own paper, I decided that I too would be ambitious, perhaps hubristically so. My subject is nothing less than the ways in which the ancient Greeks told stories about life and death, or rather, lives and deaths, the lives and deaths of gods, heroes, and historical individuals. In particular, I investigated the patterns which the Greeks found in those lives and deaths. My evidence comes not only from what one might call, though the concept is controversial, the ancient genre of biography. I'm thinking of such authors as Plutarch and Diogenes Laertius, but also from a whole range of other history tellers and storytellers, Herodotus, Thucydides, and Xenophon, of course, but also the often anonymous composers of epitaphs, and no less importantly, the narrators of myths of all kinds, even writers of hymns, a prime source of evidence for the patterns in the lives of gods. I believe there is indeed something to be learned from putting biographical accounts of historical figures side by side with lives narrated in myths, even myths about gods. What I found was that certain narrative patterns are partly or wholly distinctive to one or other of the three categories of god, hero, and historical individual, but that there are also interesting overlaps and interferences between the three categories. About gods and goddesses, I can be brief. Their powers tend not to develop or evolve. Rather, those powers are already active from birth. Almost always, the biographies of gods lack a telos. With heroes, things are usually different. Their powers, too, are often already evident in adolescence. But what's most significant in a heroic life is not the beginning, but the telos, which relates in all sorts of ways to the life which went before. Sometimes this relationship is one of continuity. Hector's death is the perfect telos for a hero dedicated to the defense of his city. Alternatively, a heroic telos may be banal, but ironically appropriate to the hero's earlier career. Jason died when a piece of wood from the Argo fell on his head. Or there may be a more intricate relationship between a heroic career and its telos, as with the mysterious death of Oedipus, which relates in a quite complicated and subtle way to the career, by turns triumphant and horrific, which went before. Not so much the Oedipus complex as the complex Oedipus. With heroines, the pattern is usually different again. The telos, which decisively shapes their lives, is often not death, but loss of virginity followed by childbearing. By comparison, the telos of their death may be rather insignificant. Unless, that is, it is the telos of suicide, whereby a heroine, or less commonly a hero, places her or his stamp upon their life. And there's yet another pattern for both heroes and heroines, a pattern culminating in the telos of metamorphosis. One thinks of Niobe, or Daphne, or Lycaon. Once more, the telos is the prime bearer of meaning in a heroic career. It's worth noting that in most of these diverse patterns, the ends of heroes and heroines are violent, or at least in some ways startling and dramatic. Above all, memorable, and therefore significant. And most importantly, you need to know the telos of a hero or heroine in order to comprehend the meaning of the bios which went before. What of my third category, historical individuals? The patterns are far more varied than those for gods and considerably more varied than those for heroes and heroines. But patterns there still are, some of them replicating patterns I've already mentioned and some diverging from them. One divergence is that there are far fewer ancient biographical accounts of historical Greek women than there are of heroines or goddesses, a reflection, presumably, of women's relative prominence in religious practice compared with other areas of public life. As for similar patterns, some major historical figures, like many heroes and gods, already show early signs of their later prowess. Aeschylus, Themistocles, and of course Alexander, to name three. The corollary of this is that biographies of historical individuals tend not to refer to a major evolution in character. Of course, there are exceptions, but they remain exceptions. What patterns relating to historical individuals and heroes have in common, as distinct from patterns relating to gods, is the telos. As for the magnificent Hector-like telos in battle, Simonides' words can stand for hundreds of other epitaphs. Of those who died at Thermopylae, glorious is their fate, beautiful their death. The appropriate telos is another favorite pattern, as with the death of Pythagoras, caught and killed by enemies when he refused to cross a field of beans. Phasolakia. Then again, there is the banal and ironical death. Aeschylus was killed when an eagle dropped a tortoise on his head, a tortoise being the animal whose shell is used to make the lyre. Thus, the poet was ironically killed by an object instrumental in his artistic success. Incidentally, on holiday at the English seaside last summer, I saw seagulls repeatedly dropping shellfish onto the beach in order to break them open. However, on English beaches, there are no eagles, no tortoises, and not many tragic poets. So my evidence is only indirect. Deaths like those of Pythagoras and Aeschylus exhibit their own kinds of shape. Another kind is the telos of a mortal who dies peacefully and in a manner said to equate him to the gods. Chilon, the Spartan ephor and wise man, passed away overwhelmed with joy after congratulating his son on an Olympic boxing victory. Such blissful culminations supposedly make humans resemble, not heroes, whose dramatic ends typically lack tranquility and peace, but rather divinities, in spite of the paradoxical fact that the notion of an end, tranquil or not, is by definition inapplicable to an immortal being. Now, I wouldn't be an academic if I didn't insist at this point that things are actually much more complicated than the picture which I have been sketching out. Indeed, that those boundaries between gods and heroes, and between heroes and historical individuals, can sometimes be fluid. There were historical individuals, Brasidas, Alexander, numerous others, who achieved heroization. There were also occasionally gods who died. Even Zeus was said in Crete to have died and been buried, unless you believe that all Cretans are liars, which, given the presence of many Cretans in the audience, is something I would not dream of suggesting. Not only am I aware that my three categories are not watertight, I'm also conscious that my data are incomplete. One area I really need to look at, but haven't yet done so, is the case studies reported by ancient doctors. What patterns can we see there in the alternations of health and sickness, culminating unfailingly in the ultimate telos which none can escape? But instead of staying with antiquity, I want briefly to reflect on some diachronic aspects of biography and thanatography. The history of biography since antiquity is a monumentally rich subject, and I can't do justice to it in 5 minutes. Instead, I'll focus on the present. Go into any bookshop, at least in Britain, and you'll find shelf upon shelf of biographies of politicians, kings and queens, writers and artists, military leaders, sportsmen and sportswomen, and stars of film and television, the new heroes and heroines. More recently still, there have been reality TV shows, Big Brother and All Its Little Brothers, which have generated in popular magazines. biographies, and sometimes thanatographies of the participants, individuals plucked from obscurity into a celebrity world where their lives become momentarily worthy of public record. And there are newspapers as well as magazines. Many of our journalist colleagues present in this room will have written obituaries. What patterns, I wonder, do you inscribe in the obituaries you write? Do you look for significance in the telos? All these aspects of biography and thanatography constitute what one might call contemporary life writing. When I began my undergraduate studies at the end of the 1960s, the received wisdom among academic historians was that life writing was trivial. The history that mattered was that of a movement, a class, not an individual. A similarly negative verdict was practically universal among literary critics. A poem or novel spoke for itself and had no need of facile interventions from the writer's biographer. But nowadays, I get the feeling that the pendulum has swung. That is, after all, what pendulums do. Biographies have become more respectable. At all events, they've become more sophisticated. Not just in respect of the wealth of factual research on which the best of them rest, but in terms of the psychological depth which they attain. To investigate the career of a political or artistic figure without reaching back into early childhood would now be unthinkable for any serious biographer. In one's beginning is to be found, even more emphatically than ever, the origin of all that followed. To write a life is to find patterns. Even amid the incredible wealth of detail, Leon Adel's monumental life of the novelist Henry James comes back again and again to the psychological schema of the author's subservience to women. Such themed psychographies have formidable predecessors. One thinks of life writing by André Maurois and Émile Ludwig. Though the search for patterns is not to everyone's taste, as Roy Foster, the biographer of the Irish poet W.B. Yeats, puts it, we do not live our lives in themes, but day by day. The genre of biography is not the only contemporary context for thinking about patterns of life and death. There is also the science of genetics, which is allowing us to make more and more sophisticated predictions based on probabilities concerning a person's chances of contracting this or that disease. In my beginning, in my genetic code, is my end. And of course, this constitutes a marvelous advance in understanding. But whatever the scientific gains, there will be new existential problems to confront. In Aeschylus' Prometheus Bound, the one respect in which the metamorphosed mortal maiden Io is superior to Prometheus is that whereas ignorance enables her to hope that any moment might bring the end to her suffering, his infallible predictive knowledge denies him that luxury and multiplies his torment. The shared ambition of totalizing psychobiography and genetic prediction is to emphasize how much of an individual's subsequent life is already implicit in its beginning. But let's not get carried away by the quest for patterns. Let's, as always, listen to Thucydides. Several of his most far-sighted characters are painfully conscious of life's unpredictability. As Hermocrates puts it in Book 4, the future is out of my control. All the psychobiographers and all the geneticists in the world will avail me nothing if I walk down a street where an eagle is flying overhead carrying a tortoise in its beak. Ευχαριστώ πολύ.